Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 002 Off the Chain. We'd like to thank everybody who came out for our launch event outside of Avon last week, our free bacon launch event. We are at MC Vocal Fry on Facebook and Twitter, www.vocalfry.com on the interwebs. Those are all Vocal Fry with an I. We apologize this week. We had a little bit of some sound difficulties, but moving forward, we've resolved those, and we shouldn't have this problem again. Hope you enjoy episode 002. Off the Chain.
You're listening to the MC Vocal Fry podcast, your weekly dash of voice science, pedagogy, and pop culture, coming to you from the campus of Mississippi College in Clinton, Mississippi.
Is it a thumbtack or a pushpin? Okay, this is actually where I wanted to start today. I wanted to start with something we hit on yesterday in class. So we were in repertoire class yesterday with these two and their colleagues, and we came to this moment where I said that something was off the chain. And Ms. Welch and everybody else under the sun sort of, you know, went into this thing of how I'm not allowed, I guess at my age, to say something is off the chain.
It's not just
your
age.
No one at any age should say off the chain.
Except hold on, you guys
maybe
are
like 50 cents.
You guys are a little hot. Hold on.
We turned up our volume.
Yeah, we started screaming at you. This is how compressors work. This is why we need compressors.
Okay, now that's better.
Look, unless you're like 50 cents. Okay? Or in fact,
I don't think they should say off the chain.
Or two chains. You're not two chains.
Okay, but this is not one of those things that I should be like concerned about that had some kind of weird double meaning.
No. This isn't
okay,
like a
right.
Secretly like is it, there's no
some
like,
kind of secretly weird internet
just,
message that like
no, it's
okay.
Just like this. It's like this. Because it's not just age. It's the fact there are pictures of there are recent pictures of Dr. Perna, I think, on the Mississippi College website. So just know that in the 7 years I've known him, he has shifted fully into dad mode. Admittedly, he had two children in the time that I've known him, but fully into dad mode. So now being in dad mode, dad jokes are a thing.
Dad jokes are definitely a
dad
thing.
Dad clothes are a thing.
Oh, I'm all about the dad clothes.
References.
Listen, I have polos for every day of the week.
This is very much like the first episode with Matt Smith, where he has this extraordinary rant at the end of the episode and then goes, "Huda man, I'll never say that again. That was terrible, I promise."
Is
and
this
it,
are you talking about
like
you're talking
that.
About Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Matt Smith, yeah.
Yes. Of course I am. Who
well,
are
I just
another Matt Smith.
Well,
sure
no, but I figured it wasn't. We weren't talking about
no.
The Crown because I mean.
Oh, why would
because
he?
Because Matt Smith is phenomenal on
the
Crown.
Yeah,
the by
Crown.
The
way. I do
Holy
think
cow.
About the Crown Prince and things like that. He does make those kind of little
yeah,
statements.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially back
on
in the early
1900s. The Crown Prince.
Okay. Well, I just I do feel like though that I have no sort of reference point because I have entered dad world for these things that I'm apparently there's like a code that I'm not allowed to say or that I am allowed to say.
You need to
and I'm not talking about anything inappropriate. I'm talking about a phrase like off the chain.
I think it's slang. Just
any slang?
I don't know.
I think it's idiomatic slang that young people would say.
So I'm not supposed to say things like
say off the chain.
Okay.
No
that,
one should say off the chain.
Here's where it is. Here's where it is. It's I think it's things that people used to say but don't say anymore,
that.
But you say them as if they still are said.
Yeah, you have to say it ironically.
Whatever, bro.
No, that seems really normal. I still say that.
Oh, okay. Because I say
not,
that a lot.
But it's not bro. Bro is too formal.
Formal?
It's bruh.
Bruh.
Yeah. And you don't even say
no.
Whatever. Bruh.
Don't
and now
bruh.
We have entered the world of bruh.
Bruh.
Please,
B-R-U-H.
Well, okay, here we are in the world of bruh.
No. think
no.
it's also a person thing, because like my siblings are horrified if I use any slang. And I mean, I'm 23 years old. If I want to say the word lit, I should be able to say it. But
that seems
probably,
rather dated to me, actually.
No, it's
are you kidding
odd.
Me? And
lit,
off the
lit.
Chain isn't? This is what we're going to have? Okay.
You're going to come in tomorrow with MC Hammer pants on or something.
Hey, listen, dude. We rocked.
Dude is dated.
Okay. We rocked the parachute pants about 1990. I'm just letting y'all know. We rock. I had parachute pants. I'm not too proud.
You know, I was negative 1 year old in 1990.
Well, all right. Okay. So we're back. Welcome to week two of the MC Voice Ped Talk of the Week.
Yeah.
Last week we started with a lively discussion of why I don't watch Game of Thrones. This week it appears I wanted to, just because it happened in class yesterday, I wanted to deal with this off the chain business.
I think cowboy seat was far more amusing for
Cow-
me.
What was it?
You referred to a saddle
as a
the
cowboy
seat.
Oh, yes. We were talking about one of my birthdays. My wife was out of town, and my kids and I went to one of those steakhouses, and we won't name them unless they'd like to sponsor us. So if you're listening out there and you would like to be the sponsor for the MC VoicePed podcast, so that our probably by this point three subscribers, because the three of us are going to subscribe, So if you could like to reach your audience here, a target audience of people interested in voice, singing, research, and pop culture, and you'd like to sponsor the VoicePed podcast, you can email me personally at nkperna@mc.edu. We're working on an email address for the podcast, but I don't have that yet. So you can, and eventually we will be on social media, but I'll let you know about that in the bumper before and after the show, not right now, because it hasn't been created, because remember, we're in a time machine. Very good. And by the way, by next time, I've ordered a spit guard for my microphone, so you can hopefully stop hearing me spit my consonants onto the mic by next time.
You could fix that by turning the gain up on your microphone and sitting just a little bit back.
I'm just really
okay.
glad that you clarified that the spitting is consonants.
But I sort of like
spitting.
Being right on the mic. I've sort of become a habit now already.
No.
Anyway.
One time I had a sound guy at me, Michael, when you get really into it, just have one sane thought, and that sane thought is, don't put the microphone inside your actual mouth.
People do that, though.
So, moving back to where we are, because I need to update these guys. We are running this project that we're going to talk about the background of today. But the good news I wanted to share with both of you is we're already up to 8 subjects that have agreed to participate. We began subject recruitment this week, which I'll tell you about a little bit today, I guess, but I'm going to rewind it today because we had actually sort of started to set up the project that we're doing this fall last week, and then because it was our first week ever doing this, we lost a bunch of audio. Yay, computers. But I'm hoping that I've had that fixed, and I've been playing with Audacity a lot this week. I figured out how to encode MP3s. So that's a thing. It took
off
me a while.
Off the chain!
Is it off the chain or on the chain?
Off the chain. Off the chain.
Off the chain!
Oh, gosh. Okay. It was lit. So anyway, and it was amazing because I would actually like to point out that it was the other parent in the room at the time of class yesterday. When I said off the chain, that actually lit me up. It was not one of the younger students in their mid-20s. It was actually the other parent in the room.
Who is older than you.
Who was saying that I should not say that.
Okay, but admittedly, she worked in the music industry in Nashville, so she is like a young person inside with a pulse on the pop cultural world.
And what am I?
A voice teacher at Mississippi College.
Oh, gosh.
With
okay.
two small children.
There you have it.
Opera.
Anyway, so to recap, you know, we're here talking about our project. We have this joint relationship between us and the University of Mississippi Medical Center. We're running our first sort of big, large-scale IRB project this fall. We've gotten IRB approval, and we're ready to move forward. We've started with subject recruitment now, and we're going to be starting testing actually sooner than later at this point, because we are now into the next month and the month that we're going to start actually testing. So we're going to start getting people scheduled for screenings and that kind of stuff, which I can tell you about in a second. But let's just talk about the project a little bit. I had you guys sort of reread my little paragraph for today about sort of how we came to this. And last year, as the folks at the Med Center and I, my speech pathologist, our chief of speech pathology, actually, Josie Alston, and our ENT, Dr. John Schweinfurth, otolaryngology faculty at UMMC, we have this lab equipment, and we have this joint venture between us and for my grad students, and then for them, and any residents that would want to join in or anything like that. And we have this research collaboration that we're trying to get off the ground. And last year, we took a lot of the year, and we developed a research agenda. And if you've never developed a research agenda, know that it takes time. And it's one of the things that I've tried to prepare these guys for. As they're moving forward, for any of you who have written dissertations, you know that it takes time, because it took you a long time to write your dissertation, probably a number of years. And one of the things that takes time is just being in the literature and staying then current in that angle of the literature, because it's one thing to sort of know voice research as a generality, which we sort of learn about in like voice pedagogy classes and our, you know, maybe a voice science class or acoustics class or things like this. But in the end, when you're actually getting into research, most of us who do this kind of work are not experts at everything. You know, and just as, okay, for example, I don't know, what's your favorite rep to sing?
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a horrible question. I don't know.
What do you enjoy?
I like opera.
Okay, but do you prefer French opera? Do you prefer German opera? Do you prefer Italian opera?
We talked about this yesterday. All right,
perfect. I know, I was just trying to get there. Okay, so Sarah prefers singing in Italian opera. Her voice is very well suited to it. She's got a lovely soprano voice, and she does very well with what Italian presents her as opportunities. What do you prefer?
Not Italian.
Aha. See, this is why I took us down this road. Okay, and so Michael, sort of, what would you say you do prefer, and what do you sort of have success with?
I really like singing in French. I think I've had a lot of success with those Duparc songs.
Yes.
And so, just the closed nature of those.
Of the language.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Actually what drives her nuts about it, probably.
Right, I make really nice sounds in that with those.
Okay, all right. And so, as singers, we all sort of recognize this kind of thing, that in the end, yes, we try to give you broad spectrum, and, you know, for juries and recitals and all this kind of, and repertoire-wise audition packages, you know, you need to have your French, your Italian, your German, your Spanish maybe, or Russian, or, you know, and obviously English. But in the end, you're not a specialist at everything. You're not an early music specialist and a Verdi specialist, usually. Well, in voice research, it really is the same way. You're not necessarily an acoustics expert and an expert in the area of vocal fry and an expert in the area of the acoustics of commercial singing and an expert in the area of Mongolian throat singing. Now, you might be, and I think there are folks who know about all that stuff. I mean, if we're talking about sort of the giants in voice research, if we're talking about, you know, Dr. Sundberg or Dr. Tietze or something like this, you know, because they've been such broad spectrum folks. But most of us, especially as we're developing, you know, trying to, you know, develop a new collaboration or something, you sort of need to find holes in the literature that haven't been done, because one of our, again, our goals is to do stuff that matters. But you also need to then take some time to see literally what needs, where the need is, you know, and that's the sort of first part anytime you're doing research. You might be curious about something. For example, yesterday, I want to come back to this, how curiosity plays into it, but yesterday we're in undergrad ped, and I have a big cohort in there with a very wide background. I think there's probably 5 voice studios represented within that. And it's been I mean, like yesterday, we were just talking about anatomy, like basic directions of anatomy, you know, not like actually talking about anatomy, but lateral, superficial, these kind of words, just getting word, just getting words and their opposites, you know, like, you know, inferior, superior, those kind of things. And so, but all their questions, so I have my students do these reading questions. When they do a reading, they always have to submit them as an assignment, like a dig deeper question or a clarification question. And like 60% of the class, 70% of the class all ask about the diaphragm. Because there was a statement in the chapter about what the diaphragm does or something. You know, something sort of just was, that was just in there as just an example of something. As there was an example about the cardiac muscle as well. But of course, singers, you know, go to the diaphragm, of course. I mean,
because you must sing from the diaphragm.
Right. We do not, we'd like to say that that is obviously an anatomic impossibility.
Sing from the diaphragm.
And not a thing that actually physiologically happens. We know the truth. But we're also interested sometimes in the lie that might have been good reason to have those kind of ideas in the first place.
A good enough lie.
Right, for us. Anyway, so as I was talking to them, all I did, this is all I did, was put up visible body and put up the inhalation action of the thorax and highlighted the diaphragm.
Visible body is a thing online that you
App.
It's an app.
So if Visible Body would like to sponsor the MC VoicePed Talk of the Week...
You could just the school free subscriptions to Visible Body.
Well, we've already bought it.
Oh, we've already bought it. Well, next time.
We own it for our school, and in our computer lab, in the music lab, we have it on our computers.
Oh, like forever?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. Give us something else.
I think money is what he was
asking
for.
Money is good.
Anyway, but no, so I just put Visible Body up, and I had it, you know how, with the animation running. And I just highlighted the diaphragm.
To be clear, Visible Body shows you the movement of different musculature and just different stuff in the body. It's literally visible.
It's an anatomy program. Body. It's an anatomy program. And with certain muscles, you can see their action.
Right. Yeah.
So I have it just going back and forth. That's it. And I just put it on the screen. And the moment I put it on the screen, you should have seen the faces of just bewilderment.
Oh, yeah. They were all very shell-shocked. Oh,
my goodness.
And they were like, well, no wonder I can't. It's just right here. It's so small.
It's actually very large. I don't know where they
thought it was small.
They must have. I think they thought it was like their whole stomach.
Yeah.
Like walking out, and I said a bunch of, you know, anyway, I was just like, wow, okay. I wasn't even trying to say anything controversial about the diaphragm.
Wait,
or
so they thought it was huge before.
It was smaller than they thought.
I think they thought it like coated their entire anterior abdominal wall.
I mean, if you've never studied the diaphragm, would you really guess that it's this?
It's a
because they
sheet?
Thought it was literally what was pressing out your abs,
you
your anterior
like, if I
abs.
Do sit-ups, I'm going to be able to breathe better. Like, I'm sure that's what, I mean.
I think that's still
head,
research that's waiting to be
that.
Done at some point, by the way.
Well, there you go.
I use that discussion as an example just for, you know, why we sort of need to be curious, because clearly they were curious. I mean, I don't think I've ever had an undergraduate class who wants to ask questions as much as this group. And that's no offense to when you guys took the course at all as undergraduates. But I was just like, whoa, okay, all right. And then some other students in the class, I sort of have to bring some of them back, because one of the young women in the class was like, I don't know any of this stuff yet. Am I supposed to already know all this? I was like, no. It's the beginning of the semester. This is why we have this class. Anyway.
You're supposed to be presented with information you don't know.
So, going back to the research, when you're starting a project, it's one thing to be curious. But the reality is curiosity sort of, you know, what's the old adage? Curiosity killed the cat or something.
Yes.
The reality is you have to get then into the literature and see if there's, if what you're already curious about, maybe there's already an answer. I mean, so often, I think we in the singing community don't do a good job of, what's the right word? Absorbing the dissemination of information that's already there. Because the reality is, there are still so many I don't want to say arguments, but rigorous debate over things that happen with the singing voice. And the reality is we so many of those things, we already know the answer to them. And there's a lot. And listen, I'm not blaming voice teachers here for this. I think that, you know, it's so easy as a voice teacher to just be in the studio and you get busy and you're singing and you're trying to, you know, do whatever else you're trying to do, be it, you know, your lessons, you're teaching a class, maybe you're having meetings if you're in academia, and you're recruiting and you're advertising if it's a private studio and you're singing and you have rehearsal and you have to learn this piece or that piece and you're also maybe trying to have a family or a life, which is difficult sometimes. And I think it's easy to sort of get out of the literature and get out of just what is already known. And so this is just imploring all you young people who are listening to be lifelong learners. I'm trying to encourage these two to continually be curious. Never think you actually know the answer, because the more you learn, the more you realize that you actually don't have any of the answers. Even though I just said that I think we know most of what we're going to know about the singing voice. that's a very big generality. But my point was that I think there's a lot more out there that we already know, and we in the singing voice community don't do a good job of ingesting that information and processing it and then incorporating it into our teaching. And that's one of the things I want to try to preach for these guys as voice teachers, is to constantly be changing, constantly be learning, and then not just learning and leaving your pedagogy the exact same, but be learning and then altering your pedagogy. Because Michael, who, you know, we sort of have this advantage that Michael worked with me a number of years ago as an undergraduate, I think he would confirm that my teaching is sort of nothing like it was.
It's wildly different.
Right. I mean,
there's actually things that you yourself have been like, I'm sorry I taught you that. We're going to fix that now.
Well, I mean, you know, and I think many of us as voice teachers, when we look back to like when we started teaching voice, we sort of look at ourselves like, why did I say that to a student? Oh my goodness gracious. Anyway, okay, so getting back into the research. So when you go to do a project, you as a researcher need to know the literature. And it takes time to find where those holes are. And it also obviously has to be something that you can accomplish. I mean, we weren't looking to do anything with MRI because MRI is expensive, hourly rates, and it's much more difficult to pursue. We have this huge advantage here with our joint venture with UMMC and MC that we have access to their lab equipment that they bought a number of years ago when they built their new building. And so for this particular study that we're using, we're actually looking at some aerodynamic measurements, and so we're using the K-Pentax phonatory aerodynamic system. And if K Pentax would like to sponsor the MC VoicePed podcast,
they can write a check and send it to Michael Hamm.
No, they can't. But you could email us at nkperna at mc.edu. Anyway, so what the PAS, and we'll keep referring to this device as the PAS, just so you know, from here on out. If we refer to the PAS, it is a device. It looks sort of like, what does it look like, guys? It has a mask, like
it's
a gas
like
mask
a,
on one end.
It's like a
It has two handles.
It's like a plastic thing. It looks to me like a fancy breathing machine that you would hold to your
you're
face.
Right.
Like that's
like
sort of right.
Out.
Yes,
yeah,
almost like
a
ventilator. Yeah, like a nebulizer or something.
That's
that's right. Except rather than it putting anything into you, it's just taking signals from you. And so it actually combines a bunch of different signals. It combines measures of airflow. So actually, what's happening in terms of the air movement, it is measuring acoustic signal because it has a little microphone. Now, you wouldn't want to just take your acoustic measures. If any of you are out there looking to do singing voice research, this is not what you would want to do, just to hear what's going on and then try to analyze that in CSL or using Pratt or whatever. This is not the device you're looking for. But it does give us a measure of sound pressure level. And then it also has a little tube that goes into the gas mask that you can use to... What'd you say?
Are you my mommy?
Are you my... Oh, it's like Doctor Who. We're back to Doctor Who. References. Are you my mommy? Yeah, yeah. That was a scary episode. Oh, that might be Eccleston's best episode.
It is. That's what really, confirmed that I loved the show. I loved him.
Yeah,
of
that's
course,
right.
Then you're heartbroken because Bad Wolf and all that.
Yeah. When you go back and see all the Bad Wolf references, like,
yes,
from
you're like, wow,
one,
I was stupid
like,
for
wow.
not noticing this.
I noticed them everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Where are you people?
They're everywhere.
Maybe you already knew.
I have
something.
A short attention span, so I like kind of stop paying attention to what's happening in any given episode and go, hey, there's those words again. Where'd those come from?
Oh my gosh. Wow. This might be useful in the research, actually. Hey, there's that phenomenon again. We should pay attention to that.
You're like, what are you talking about? Oh, that thing right there. It always happens.
So anyway, what the PAS also measures is, with the tube, when you seal your lips around it, it is measuring your intraoral pressure, and then it, through a mathematical calculation, is then giving you a calculation of your subglottic pressure. Do we want to say what those words mean?
Yes.
Sure.
What is your subglottic pressure?
It's the pressure underneath the glottis. That is to say, where your vocal folds are.
So when you're
the vocal
pretty
folds.
Direct.
So when your vocal folds close while you're phonating,
yes,
there is a buildup of
pressure.
Air pressure, which we measure in centimeters of water squared. Yes?
Yeah.
See? Yep.
Yes.
Fantastic. Wasn't that part exciting?
It was. And also, I feel like that's one of those words that sounds very sciencey and complicated, but then as soon as someone goes to explain it, you're like, oh, yeah, I should have got, like, I feel like I should have known that.
So the measurement we're actually going to use, though, as we're looking at the effect of laryngeal massage or manipulation on singers, we're actually going to be looking at a measure called laryngeal airway resistance, where you take the pressure and you divide that by the flow. So you take the subglottal pressure and then you divide that by the airflow, which does take some math. I'm sorry, singers who are listening, there is a little bit of math, but we promise not to dwell on math on this show. Although, you know, I've discovered this week, I think that my daughter, who does not particularly like reading, my son loves reading, and he's good at math, but my son loves reading, just like his mother. But my daughter, who's in kindergarten, I'd like to point out, is going to be super good at math.
She is an evil genius.
Super good at math.
Like algebra, math, or geometry? Because I feel like most people
she's
tend
in
to
kindergarten.
Gravitate.
She's in kindergarten.
So does she like shapes or numbers?
Well, let me just put it this way. She was the only student in her class who knew where to put the zero in their number matrix.
Oh! Algebra.
What's a number matrix?
Common Core. Insert STEM influence of public education comment here. Okay, anyway, so as we got into developing, so that's the device that we're going to be using, and the measurement we're going to be using is this laryngeal airway resistance, because we thought that would be a good indicator. If we have sort of a reduction of laryngeal airway resistance, and we have increased acoustic signal at the same time, then there's good rationale to say, hey, that sound might have been produced more efficiently, if we see that as a reoccurring thing. Now, so to give you the other background of this, as we were in the literature, there was a study by the folks down at LSU, and they did this big survey, Gish et al., 2010, Journal of Voice. My friend Lorraine Sims was part of that study. They found that only 13% of singers incorporated any kind of laryngeal massage and or, I think, if I remember the study exactly, stretching into their warm-up routine.
So that could really mean anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if I remember, it was combined with something else, probably for the purposes of making it look like more of a measurement, you know, because if it was 1% or something that said laryngeal massage, then it's sort of irrelevant. But let's just, for the benefit of the doubt, say it was 13. That's still a very low number.
Yeah.
And as we talked about last week, and then we lost the audio of it, when we were talking about it, you want to talk about the Usain Bolt thing?
Yeah, so the way that this was explained to me, which is, I think, the way that Josie explained it to you, if I remember correctly,
yes,
is that when Usain Bolt, or sprinters, we'll say, get ready to sprint, they stretch, or they jog a little bit, and then they stretch, and then they get ready, and then they do the thing. As singers, the nature of our warm-ups is like, there's no stretching, there's very little jogging. It's more like we sprint to sprint, just considering the nature and the range of a lot of our warm-ups. And yeah, and I think that part of that is that we're not understanding the difference between, like, we're warming up to prepare the voice to sing, or we're doing technique stuff. And so
yes.
The idea here is that if stretching is appropriate for an athlete warming muscles up, how much more than for a singer who's, you like, with extremely fine motor control, should we get those muscles fine-tuned and ready to go and probably include some stretching?
Pause. Hold that thought.
Anyway, we were talking about the background of the study, and I really hope we didn't lose that whole episode, but we were talking about the background of the study, and so we were mentioning that the first thing we found was that 13% of singers were only incorporating laryngeal massage with their warm-up. Michael sort of explained the rationale, like the sprinter analogy of why we need to maybe be incorporating literal physical touch-esque stretching into our routines. And the interesting thing about this is that in the disordered voice, so voices with muscle tension dysphonia, there was a study by the folks in Pittsburgh, D'Astolfo et al., 2015, I think was the Journal of Voice. It might have been a different journal. I have to go back and check that. But D'Astolfo et al., 2015. And they found that average airflow increased after treatment in MTD type 1 patients. And so we figured that if that kind of reaction was happening and laryngeal manipulation was helping a disordered voice recover, it made sense for us to look at what the incorporation of laryngeal manipulation into singing warm-up would do for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at.
Yes.
And so our hope is that we did not lose this whole episode. And our second hope is that we can test this out. And next week, because again, we're not quite to sub data collection yet. Next week, what we're going to talk about is the method of how we're setting this up and what the folks are going to have to do. And Sarah and I will tell you about our wonderful day of filming videos next week.
Oh. I didn't realize we were going to talk about that. It was a weird day. We got weird by the end. I kind of feel bad that people are going to watch those.
Oh, come on.
They're not that bad, but they're not that bad.
It was sort of weird filming them, but we'll tell you all about that next week.
Did you smile a lot?
Sorry, I'm just imagining these like laryngeal massage videos. So it's like this, You can't see my face right now, but I'm smiling and I'm touching my neck.
Well, maybe not so much during the massaging part.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
But during the warm ups,
we were laughing a lot.
We laughed a lot. It was unfortunate because I was like off camera, and so it looks like he's laughing at like
nothing.
Okay. Anyway, again, we're sorry. We'll try to get the audio mixed as well as we can. We hope that we have audio still. And okay, so last week we didn't get our final thought in.
Oh,
so
no.
I lost our takeaway points.
Okay.
So this week we can have takeaway points. So,
dang it.
So what is your takeaway point from today?
I prefer the phrase final bullet. What's your final bullet?
Oh, sorry. Is that what you said? Final bullet. So
final
what's your
bullet?
Final bullet for today?
My final bullet.
That has a violent overtone. I don't like
it. I love it. Final bullet point.
No, I don't like that.
I love it.
I need to think of something else.
Anyways.
No, it's not.
Oh, whoa.
Let me. That came out wrong.
That's, yeah.
Anyways, my takeaway thing is this. There's a great website called nerdfitness.com, run by a great guy named Steve Camb, who talks a lot about making small necessary changes to your life to see your life improve in a long-term fashion. Kind of relates it to an RPG, the way that like you just kind of put in the grind and you do the stuff, and you're not gonna the process is the game, you know. The process is the game. When you try to cheat, you end up sucking all the fun out of the game, and then you're like, that was no fun. And so, but there are no cheat codes in life. But the thing is this, he posted this great video. Here's my point. There's this great video that he posted, nerdfitness.com on YouTube. You've been waiting on bated breath.
Your bullet point is a paragraph.
Look, my point is this, there's a video you have to watch called Days and Years, Not Weeks and Months. And it's about perspective. As we've been talking about, research takes time, and there's a process. Days and years, so it's like, what can I do today, and then next year, what will that cause? Rather than go, what do I have to do this week and this month, it drives people crazy. Days and years, weeks and months, Nerd Fitness.
Okay, if Nerd Fitness would like to sponsor the MCU voice podcast, you can email NKPRNA.
You're going to have to come up with another email, because it sounds like you're just like, this is Michael saying, you can write that out. You can make that out to Michael. That's what that sounds like. You just send that to NK Perna.
We'll work on like MC Voice Ped podcast.
My routing number is.
No. Don't say that. On
no, they'll go the other way.
Takeaway.
Oh, dear.
There you go. I want to use takeaway.
I need to get better at this, because the minute you say Sarah, thought, all the words just leave my brain. Everything we've talked about has exited.
That's a good takeaway.
Don't put people on the spot. There
that's
you
a,
go.
That's what I'm saying. That's a good. Thank you. We hadn't had a bell. We got a bell.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a bell. We have to make sure that makes it into the episode. And I think my takeaway this week is that these guys are awesome, and I'm so glad they come in and spend their Friday morning here. But also, I think comparing the PAS to the Are You My Mummy episode of Doctor Who is now like a new thing in my life.
I know. We need to find people that watch Doctor Who to do this study so we can make that reference.
In the middle of taking their data, you just listen.
Are you my mummy?
No, we're not doing that. And we actually can't ask them if they watch Doctor Who. That would have had to have been an official survey question that would have to receive IRB approval.
Oh. So, well, then I won't ask them
once
that.
Once they are out of the room, we could then just as a friend ask them.
Or before they enter the room as a friend.
Or that. Okay. Very good. All right. Signing off. Thank you, guys. Have a great week.